The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio, episode number 324. I'm Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton of BootingGreenNation.com. The Eagles kicked off OTAs earlier this week. Well, depending on when you're listening to this, I think the actual date was the May 30th was the first day. But the first day that Eagles media was actually able to watch a practice was on Thursday, June 1st. So we got our first look at the rookies alongside the vets. Wasn't a super intense practice, but some, you know, initial observations to, you know, take of the team and they're, you know, in our first time seeing the team in its entirety together. So what Brandon and I will do in this episode is just sort of bat it back and forth on what we saw at the first practice, the first full Eagles media attended practice. But before we get to all that, I know that I need to know where I can find the finest meat snacks in the land.
RighteousFelon.com. Righteous Felon. Craft Jerky, discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. Jimmy, it's always great to be at the NovaCare Complex to watch a practice. I think that's one of the most enjoyable aspects of our job, at least for me it is. I can't speak for you, but I feel like it is because it's fun. It's fun to get to see the guys practice, especially because, I mean, this one is the first look at the 2023 Eagles, not in their full form, certainly. A lot of players were not in attendance because right. It's voluntary.
They're voluntary, to be clear.
Yeah. So, and, you know, certain guys just don't need to be there. Like, why is, you know, like Brandon Graham and Lane Johnson, who are not there, like, what are they really missing by not being there? And it's a lighter, you know, situation anyway. The Eagles run the lightest kind of off-season spring workout program in the league. They don't even do mandatory minicamp, which I think every...
Only team in the league that doesn't do the mandatory minicamp.
I thought it was like them and the Bengals. So the Bengals didn't do it last year or something. But basically, yeah.
I think they're the only team this year that doesn't have a mandatory minicamp.
It's really just, what, 6 OTA practice days in total? No more than 2 in a row. That's kind of like how they do it in training camp, too. They never really practice more than 2 days in a row. It's always an off day after that. That's probably all part of the very conscious effort to keep players as healthy as they possibly can. But like you said, there were still some takeaways to be had. So what did you take away?
Oh, I'm first. All right. Nolan Smith, I have a lot to say about him. So to begin, one of the things I was curious about, as I am every year, is, you know, what exactly these guys look like in person, alongside the already established vets on the team. And we just look at on paper at Nolan Smith's size. He's 6'2", he's 238, which is very undersized for an NFL edge rusher. On the field, that dude doesn't look undersized at all to me. He looked like he looked stout. He looked like, there's one play where he was actually Dallas Goedert caught a pass and was running in the field. Nolan Smith trailed that play from behind, you know, caught him. And, you know, look at those two guys standing side by side. There's, like, not that much of a difference. And Goddard's a pretty big tight end, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, this is a guy that does not look to me, you know, just watching him on the field. I don't know if he gained weight since the combine in Indy in February. But he does not look like he's going to get run over by anyone like in the NFL. Like he'll be able to, he looks stout to me, and the athleticism was certainly there. But the thing that sort of impressed me about him, just in terms of his play on the field yesterday, and we should note first off, you know, right off the bat, they had some 7-on-7 drills. They didn't do any team drills. So, like I said, it wasn't like a really intense practice in any way. But during those 7-on-7 drills, what he would do is he would rush the quarterback. And obviously, there's no offensive line, so he's not, that's not even competitive in any way. So he's, you know, he's a free run at the quarterback. So his job was basically to run after the quarterback, stop before he got there, and then trail the play from behind. And this dude is like an Energizer bunny out there. Like the way that he was hustling back down the field after, you know, each pass was pretty impressive. It actually reminded me a little bit, and this is going to, like, you know, people don't hear about Jordan Matthews, but it reminded me of like Jordan Matthews as a rookie when he catch a pass and he run like the full, you know, length of the field. So much so that like Chip Kelly got annoyed by it after a while, like, cause he was slowing up like the next play in the sequence. So, but you know, I saw a little bit of that in Nolan Smith in his play in the first day of practice. And, you know, I think other guys on the team sort of feed off that energy. So it's good to see that he has that.
Kind of like 7-on-9, not even 7-on-7 with those two extra.
Right, exactly.
Defenders not actually like doing what they would be doing if they're allowed to actually attack the quarterback, but still kind of interesting to have them there. I think I saw Nolan Smith, you know, kind of like, you know, get some hands on Dallas Goedert or a slot receiver too, you know, like kind of try to disrupt their route a little bit coming off the line. So that's another possibility with him. But yeah, I agree with you. His energy was present. There's been a lot of Nolan Smith like podcast appearances lately. We talked about the one from or the draft clip from last week's episode where he was so fired up to get drafted and he had that great quote to Sean Desai. And then since then he's gone on like, you know, the green light with Chris Long. And
that was awesome. Did you listen to that?
Yeah, I did last night. I think I actually finally caught up. But I know you had tweeted out his quote about like the cold weather.
Yeah. I forget exactly what it was, but there's some expletives in there. But he was basically like, as long as I get to hit a MF-er, I'm happy. It was something to that effect. So like he didn't care about the cold weather as long as he gets to hit people.
Yeah. So I think Nolan, I mean, your article title for your OTA notes was like Nolan Smith could be a fan favorite. I think already is a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. And I think you know, you have to match that all the off the field stuff with actual on field production and whatnot. But I mean, man, that guy wants it. I really liked, by the way, how he did hustle down the field to chase down Dallas Goedert to then strip at the ball, which is something defenders typically do. But I think it was a little different. I don't think just any rookie goes like all the way down the field like that to Dallas Goedert, an established player, and like kind of gets up in his grill. It wasn't heated at all, but still like it was competitive. Yeah. And like Nolan Smith had like had some words with him. Again, nothing, I don't think anything heated, but still that's not just any rookie who does that and kind of like has that kind of swagger and confidence and energy to do that.
He's hungry.
He legitimately is. I think that speaks to his game, and it's kind of a benefit here that Hassan Reddick not attending gives him a chance pretty much. I mean, he was out there like, yeah, the entire time it felt like. And I'm sure he doesn't mind that. I'm sure he wants to be out there. So,
yeah, basically all the edges were out. So Hassan Reddick wasn't there. Josh Sweat, Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett is still recovering from his ACL. So it was him and like Janarius Robinson were like the only two edges out there.
Yes.
So he pretty much played almost every, if he didn't play every single rep, he played almost every single
and
rep.
And easier for those guys, I feel like, to do that again, because of the construct, as opposed to like a cornerback playing every single rep in that would be a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
Going running with the wide receivers every time. Keeping it on defense, flipping it over to a player playing at a new position. We had Zach McPherson in the slot, which isn't like a shocker considering the Eagles have like a ton of cornerbacks in their depth chart. They have like 11 or 12. They have a lot of bodies at corner. Mm-hmm. So obviously someone's going to have to play inside. Avante Maddox still recovering from that foot injury. He had surgery after the 2022 season ended. So that's kind of factoring in there. I believe just Josiah Scott wasn't practicing as well.
He was not there. He's got to have some kind of injury, I would imagine, because he wouldn't just be skipping.
That'd be a very, odd choice. So, you know, not surprising. McPherson did that a little bit in college. he kind of has a body that doesn't, like, it's not hard to imagine he could play the slot, I was thinking, as opposed to someone like, you know, like Rasul Douglas. Like, that's not going to be a guy who, like, moves inside to the slot. Someone who, you know, has the ability to change direction. So that's, you know, something to watch, and certainly a good way for him, another path for him to potentially get on the field, because, you know, we saw Maddox get banged up last year. So I think that's a big one.
Yeah, and you look at you mentioned that they have a lot of corners, and a lot of those guys are outside corners only. Like Kelee Ringo is an outside corner only. Josh Jobe's probably an outside corner only. Greedy Williams probably also an outside corner only. So they don't have a lot of depth, you know, in that slot spot. And Josiah Scott, I mean, whenever Maddox was out last year, opposing offenses would just put their best receiver in the slot and you try to get him matched up on Josiah Scott, and they all had success against him. So I think they need an upgrade at that slot position. And Zach McPherson has barely been able to play because Slay has stayed healthy. Bradbury, you know, even the year before that, Steven Nelson stayed healthy. So he's pretty much only been an outside corner himself. But, you know, DK McDonald talked after the practice. He's, of course, the new Eagles defensive backs coach with Denard Wilson, you know, gone now. So he mentioned that, you know, McPherson did play in the slot in college, and they are going to use him in the slot this year. They're going to add that to his plate. And, you know, this is something that I think we had mentioned on the podcast previously, that it makes sense to add that responsibility to what he's already doing. And it's good to see confirmation that that indeed they are going to try to, you know, make him, I would imagine he'll probably be the primary backup in the slot this year, maybe also an outside receiver.
Yeah, I could see that. And Zach McPherson.
Outside corner, I meant, not outside receiver.
Yes. Zach McPherson, I thought, looked good as a rookie in training camp. Didn't look as good in the summer, I thought, last year. Not, like, terrible, but just not quite as standout-ish. But did look good on special teams, I think, both years, and especially last year more so.
Right, and that means something, yes. You know, like, if, because he tried to make himself into a good special teamer, and that's what he has become. So there's something to that, and just in terms of, like, maximizing your ability. And there are some guys that do try to be, you know, good special teams players just to stick on the roster or whatever, and they can't. So it's just that he's able to do that is a good sign that he can, you know, that he can play in the regular defense as well.
It's not like just because he's a good special teamer means he'll be good on defense, but it does get, like, you know, like, all right, there's a chance here. He's, you know, he can work at it. You like to see that. So I think that's meaningful. Why don't we go to you again?
Yeah, so Cam Jurgens is a guy that we talked about during the last episode. You had mentioned the piece by Joe Santoliquido, who had quoted Baldy as saying that, you know, Lane Johnson wants to play next to a bigger guard. I don't know. You know, Lane didn't talk or anything. Lane wasn't even there yesterday, so I imagine he'll get asked about that at some point. But I had a chance to ask Jurgens, you know, what weight he's at now and what he wants to play at during the season. And he said he's roughly 305 now. That's probably a little too small to play guard. He said he wants to be, you know, somewhere between 310 and 315. He noted that he's, you know, his game is not going to be like Landon Dickerson style of play.
Well, they don't look anything like
a huge guard. Right. So, like, you know, his game is going to be athleticism. And, you know, he shouldn't try to be something, you know, that he's not. And I think, like, you know, adding, you know, 10 pounds or whatever it may be is a reasonable goal. He also mentioned that, like, a lot of these guys have a problem keeping the weight on with how much energy they exert during practice, especially during training camp. He said he didn't have a problem with that in previous years. So he wants to get to 310, 315 sometime before the start of camp. But he's going to need that extra weight because you face some big boys on the interior defensive line in the NFL. So you can't have him getting pushed around and being sort of put on roller skates back on, you know, back toward the quarterback. Obviously, he's blocking those guys at center, but, you know, different animal at guard than it is at center. Center, you're more helping out as opposed to, you know, getting a lot of one-on-ones against you. So, it'll be interesting to see what he looks like in camp. I think it's maybe a little overblown how small he is. Like, he looked a little bit bigger to me,
I don't agree.
In practice yesterday.
I think
no. Oh, really? Okay,
well,
go
like,
ahead.
Relative to last year, but I just think you look at him and, like, again, you look at Landon Dickerson, and you're like, that's a different thing. And I know Landon's
big,
so that's not like, you know, he's bigger than the average guard, I would say, so it's not totally fair. But that's how the Eagles like their guards, I feel like, under Jeff Stoutland, at least. They like these bigger guards. And when I see Kelsey and Juergens lined up next to each other, that kind of looks like two centers lined up next to each other, like in terms of like their body types, I think. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that might be a legitimate worry that they're a little too small there.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how they play too in camp and in the preseason and into the regular season or whatever. I didn't have a chance much to look at, what the offensive line was doing yesterday, but just in sort of catching up on some of the notes by everyone else, after I had written mine, Bo mentioned that, Steen looked pretty good just in terms of, I think it was him anyway, like his footwork, he kind of looked the part, being able to play guard or whatever. So that's a legit camp battle that's coming up between Juergens and Tyler Steen, and maybe to a much lesser degree, Jack Driscoll. That along with punter, and we'll get to that in a little bit, I think, and the slot receiver spot and the safeties and et cetera, et cetera. We actually have some legit camp battles coming up in training camp, but I think that's the biggest one because it's the one where it's, mano a mano for a starting job.
Jason Kelsey was recently on the Greenlight podcast, it's by Chris Long as well. Different episode than the Nolan Smith one. And Kelsey had mentioned...
That was good, too.
Yes, I agree. And Kelsey invoked Brandon Brooks' name when talking about Steen. Obviously, he wasn't saying it's a one-for-one. He was trying to guard against that. But still, he brought that up. And, who was... I'm trying to think. Was someone... I feel like... I can't remember. I thought someone said, they were high on Steen. I can't remember if I'm making that up or not. Anyway, not really valuable.
I mean, they drafted him with the first couple of picks in the third round. So obviously they like him to take him that high.
Yeah, I just think my point with all that, again, to reiterate from what I said last week, it's just, it's a legitimate battle to me. I think too many people are just like, Juergens one for one, Samalo done. Done and dusted. And I don't think it's that simple. I think the Eagles want Juergens to be the guy, and I think they're going to give him a chance. But I also think they know it might not 100% just work out, set it and forget it. So, we're going to have to see how that plays out. But either way, there are worse situations to have. It could be a situation. There are certainly NFL teams with much lesser people competing for a spot like that and trying to string things together and hoping it works. So not really on a concern level, 1 out of 10. I'm not anywhere near panicking, sky's falling 10, but maybe a 4.
He's got something to prove, no doubt.
All right. I guess it's my turn for the next observation. And I'll go with the quarterback. How about that? Jalen Hurts.
Okay.
Stock down, majorly down after that No. I do think he didn't really do as well with the deep ball. I don't think he connected on any, really. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Darius Slay had some good passes defensed, in fairness. Although the one was a near pick, and Dallas Goedert actually had to break it up. But first pass of the day was a impressive.
Beauty.
Yeah, impressive completion, tight window, over the middle to Quez Watkins in stride, just over N'Kobe Dean and just out of the way of a slightly trailing Darius Slay. That was a really good completion. Everything else I thought was kind of Jalen Hurts-ish in the sense of just quietly efficient. I don't remember big highlights as much as just, stacking good throws. Had a connection with Alameda Zaccheaus, who was working in with the first team. Obviously, Devontae Smith was not there, so that kind of opened up more playing time. So, we know what Jalen Hurts is at this point, but still, we're going to, we'll still monitor him closely and see how he does. And no concern at all, but I like that first throw. Did you take anything away from him?
I think the takeaway here is he's the fourth guy we've mentioned. Sure. And we just sort of expect him to play well at this point. And I thought he was fine. And that first pass that you mentioned, I had a sideline view, as we all did, of that. So I don't know how big that window was that he fitted into. You can tell better from an end zone view.
I was kind of more behind
how big these windows
that than you were.
Oh, okay.
So I was at the other side of the field and catching up. It looked pretty tight to me.
It was a tight window, and he had to have some heat on it, but it was also in the perfect spot. And it was Quez Watkins who was basically in full sprint running across the field. So like that was a legit throw. And it's not often that you'll hear players, you know, give loud compliments, you know, during play, especially after like the first play, it was essentially the first play of practice during the 7-on-7 session. Dallas Goedert was like, "Nice throw, Jay." Yeah. So like, it was a legit throw. And I guess what I'm getting at here is like the takeaway here is he's not the focus of attention anymore in this type of setting in terms of like, what does he look like? Like last year heading into OTAs or training camp or whatever, it was, can he have a good enough season where, you know, he's the guy long-term and they can use these, you know, all this draft capital on positions to surround him with talent as opposed to using it on a quarterback. And now those, you know, all that's gone because obviously he's signed to a long-term deal. The Eagles did in fact use those draft picks on talent to surround, maybe not necessarily him on the offensive side of the ball, but they had Jalen Carter and they had Nolan Smith and they can just really beef up their roster otherwise. And obviously that's a huge advantage to be able to do that in the NFL, but he's not the focus of attention anymore in these practices anymore and probably won't be during training camp. Of course, we'll watch him and we'll give our thoughts on how he's playing or whatever. But I think at this point, we just trust now that he's a really good player.
Yeah, I'm absolutely giving him the benefit of the doubt. You don't make too big of a deal of, again, those deep passes, I thought, like not being on. He was actually the third best passer in the NFL last year, deep passer, according to Next Gen Stats. Mm-hmm. They just put out an article about that I'm probably going to put in the link tomorrow or coming up shortly. But yeah, I think the best way to tie a bow on this part is you want Jalen Hurts to graduate, and he kind of has, to that, like, LeSean McCoy, Zach Ertz, Fletcher Cox level of, like we always talk about, the guys you don't even write about almost in training camp. You know, we will, again, mention Hurts because the position's more prominent.
Yeah.
But sometimes when a player just becomes so good and they do things, you don't even write about it in your notes or tweet about it because it's like, yeah, duh. Like, it's expected. It's not even interesting anymore. And that's a compliment to the player. So I think that's kind of like the goal for Hurts is to graduate to that level of being almost irrelevant. In a good way, by being so good.
Yeah, less scrutinized.
Anything else?
All right. N'Kobe Dean is where I'll go next. He is the green dot player on the Eagles defense, we learned yesterday. That actually came from Nicholas Morrow, who spoke with reporters after practice. I remember if he got asked directly, like who had the green dot or whatever, but he said N'Kobe Dean will be the green dot player in the Eagles defense. And in case you don't know what that means, he's the guy that has the radio transmitter in his helmet that communicates with the defensive coordinator who calls the plays. N'Kobe then will relay them to the rest of the defense, get guys lined up properly if they're not pre-snap. So, at much bigger responsibility for him than he had last year. I mean, he played double digit snaps last year. Didn't even get into the triple digits in the regular defense last year. Of course, a big part of that was that TJ Edwards and Kaiser White both played well enough and stayed healthy. So he didn't get that many opportunities. The one game he did play, I think it was against the Titans. I thought he showed some promise in that game, but he is going from essentially a backup and a special teamer as a rookie to basically the top linebacker on the Eagles totem pole, so to speak. If you're the green dot linebacker, you're going to be a three down backer and you're rarely ever going to come off the field. So that's sort of what the Eagles have planned for this guy heading into the season. And that's why they took him in the third round a year ago after the general consensus was that he fell way further than what was expected in the 2022 draft. So, you know, we'll get a better look at him in training camp this year. Last year, guys like TJ Edwards and Kaiser White, and even like Sean Bradley and Davion Taylor and like the other backup linebackers, they all were making plays during training camp last year, but N'Kobe wasn't. I think a big part of that was, first of all, N'Kobe Dean isn't super gifted in terms of size, of course.
Yeah, he looks small out also, there, I have to say. I mean, that's not a new observation, but it is like true. He looks tiny.
Yeah, like we mentioned, certainly on paper, like his measurables aren't impressive, like, you know, similarly as Nolan Smith. But whereas Nolan Smith doesn't look small on the field, Dean certainly does. So he's not gifted with size and he's not gifted with great athleticism. He was so successful at Georgia because he was the smartest player on the field. And he wasn't that as a rookie, of course, you know, coming into the NFL. So we'll see what kind of strides he made. He made, you know, mentally from year one to year two. And if he can sort of see plays before they happen in training camp this year and into the regular season, because he wasn't seeing it last year. And that's sort of to be expected. But I think the Eagles, you know, to just sort of make him the green dot linebacker right off the bat, is maybe a testament to what they think about how he progressed throughout the season last year.
Especially because Morrow has experienced the green dot. I believe he was that for the Bears last year. So, you know, it's not just like, hey, Morrow's always been, you know, a Will or whatever. Like, no, like that he's played at that position. So to have Nakobe over him is not surprising, but it is a deliberate choice. And, you know, look, I'm kind of wait and see on Nakobe Dean. I'm optimistic, I would say, about his potential. I'm more bullish than Barris, but I'm also not like just willing to pencil him or write in pen that he's going to be like this great starter or anything like that. Like I need to see it. Like show me something in training camp at the very least. Like especially again, you mentioned it, didn't see it last year outside of like garbage time, which is nice. And I'm not saying that's irrelevant, but like if he's going to be good, really good, especially then I don't think he can have a quiet camp. I don't think that equates to regular season, like thriving. It could just mean, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but I think it's not irrelevant. So it's a really big summer for him. Didn't really see a ton from him in day one of OTAs, but again, that doesn't really mean a lot. So will be interesting to see how he progresses. I'll stay at linebacker, but I'll go to my guy who made an interception, arguably the play of practice.
I knew once I said to Kobe, I knew you were going to keep it with linebacker. I knew you were going to mention your guy, Christian.
I mean, hey, it was a great call. I really planted the flag for Christian Ellis last week, I guess, in last week's episode. And sure enough, he made me look good by getting a really impressive leaping interception on Marcus Mariota, which, by the way, just really quickly, it's very like surreal. I know, like, I know Mariota's been an Eagle since like what, 2 months or so now, but still, like, to actually see him finally in an Eagles jersey at the NovaCare Complex is like, it's kind of wild. It's kind of crazy. It's like, oh, this is real. But yes, he picked off Mariota. That was an impressive interception. And again, I think I don't know that like he was going to start or anything. It doesn't seem crazy that he could displace Morrow because Morrow's not making like a ton of money and hasn't been like an amazing player. But even if that's not the case and Morrow and Nakobe are the top two guys, you know, there could be a situation where they play more than two linebackers or there's a rotation, or even if it's just about, or obviously they're going to have some looks where I'm sure they'll have three linebackers on the field, not a ton of them, but more than none. Maybe he could be that guy. I think Ellis has popped previously in limited playing time, and certainly at the very least, I think he's a bona fide good special teams player. So I think you're kind of expecting that once again. But I think the way you put it in your notes, I saw like he could be like an out, quote unquote, out of nowhere guy. Tommy Lawler, our great friend Tommy Lawler for EaglesBlitz.com, wrote about how, like, you know, maybe in theory he could be like a Marcus Epps, you know, like a guy that, like, last year at this time, everyone, it's a little different, not like apples to apples here, but last year at this time, everyone was like, really? Marcus Epps, like, he's going to start at safety? Like, they have to do something about that. And they didn't. They felt good about Marcus Epps. It's not the same situation because Ellis isn't currently penciled in for a starting job, but maybe they like him a lot and maybe he could rise through the ranks. I think he's an under the radar guy to watch.
I don't have anything to add on Christian Ellis, but I will note that there's one point where the running backs and I think the tight ends as well were taking, just during individual drills, they're taking swing passes from the quarterbacks out like on the perimeter and then bursting up the field from there. And actually Mariota took a rep as a receiver on, you know, during that drill. And then, you know, he sped up the field. And to see him run is like, okay, yeah, that guy can run. Like, we already know that. Like, we already know he has mobility. But when he ran, he caught a pass and then he ran up the field. It's like, okay, yeah, there are the wheels that we saw, you know, at Oregon and wherever else. And, you know, we all thought back in the day that he'd be, you know, really an incredible fit in Chip Kelly's offense. And who knows how that would have all gone down if, like, they actually were able to trade up or whatever. But certainly Mariota's career has not lived up to you know, the hopeful expectations that the Titans were, you know, had when they took him second overall. But that guy's still only 29 years old. So, like, you know, it's kind of crazy that he's been in the league as long as he has. And he's younger than Dak Prescott.
Wow. That's a good
thing anyway.
Good, well, I don't.
I think that's what Dak turns 30 in July. Let me see. I know Mariota's 29.
That's a good nugget. I mean, it's not crazy because they're only one draft class apart, right? Mariota was 2015.
Was Mariota 20? Yeah, he was 2015. Yeah.
That's not insane. Let me just make sure. It feels crazy, I guess. It feels like he's been around longer than that. But I do remember he came out young. So I think you're right about that. He was definitely.
His birthday is October 30th. Yeah. So he's like 2 years younger. Two or three months younger than Dak.
He's also younger than the Cowboys' second round pick. The 50-year-old tight end they took in the second round, Luke Schoonmaker.
Yes, Schoonmaker, who, by the way, missed practice for them with some kind of I think it was plantar fasciitis.
Oh, great. Well, yeah. I mean, when you're that old,
they not only took a really old guy, but they took an injured guy.
Anyway, real quickly on Mariota, he had his most prolific rushing season of his career last year. Like the Falcons, like were kind of using him more like that, and I think he was, you know, he wasn't playing on a great team, and also. Some of that running probably speaks to his declining ability as a passer. But, like, again, not nothing. There's value in being able to run the ball like he can, especially, again, I feel like in a situation where, God forbid, he has to start a game or two, like Minshew did in the past couple seasons, you don't necessarily have to have him drop back and throw 35 times. You could probably, because of his running ability, you could probably get away with, like, maybe low 20s if you kind of really want to limit the amount of times he throws the ball and get creative with him running around. So, I think there's value in that, especially as a backup, because it sometimes, especially in this team, it's not like they need him to go out and win the game. It's like, just don't lose the game. Like, don't go out and be the reason we lose. Just like, you know, manage the game, run around, you know, our playmakers will make plays. Defense can hopefully, you know, hold up, but just don't lose us the game. And I think there's a chance he can do that if he is able to run around and kind of play conservative like he has. He doesn't have to. He's not like a guy looking to push the ball down the field. I don't think he had any deep passes, right? I don't recall any that he had. Like,
he was horrendous as a deep passer last year. But like, do you know what his best game was against last year, by the way?
Well, it was the 49ers, but they were missing like a ton of players.
Yeah, he was. I think he was like 13 of 14 as a passer in that game. But they also just ran all over the 49ers.
Yeah,
but
they were missing like.
I guess again, because they had a lot of guys out.
I think it was like six starters. It was a lot. It was like uncanny amount.
Okay.
All right. But why don't we take a break here, Jimmy? But not before we hear about Righteous Felon, CraftJerky, RighteousFelon.com. Discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. It's one of the best ways you can support BGN Radio, which is free. But if you want to get some snacks, and they're great, and you're going to have a really fun time with them, it's RighteousFelon.com. Discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. It's a permanent discount code. It's not like a one-time-only kind of thing. So if you really like it, you can just keep reordering and using that discount code. As I know, like, a lot of listeners do that, actually, because it's a really good deal. So you can get in on that, too. Jimmy.
Back after this.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Back here on BGN Radio, where we're talking about the Eagles OTA first day of practice. Real sicko stuff here. Like, not even pads, not even, players are missing, but doesn't matter. We're getting into it all.
Well, let's get real sicko here then. Let's go with the punters. Obviously, we have a training camp battle on the horizon there. with Aaron Sipos against undrafted rookie free agent Ty Zentner after two seasons in which the Eagles didn't give Sipos any competition, which, again, mind blown. I don't know why they wouldn't, but this year he's got competition in Zentner. And we actually got a great look. We don't always get like they're not always like I shouldn't even say not always. They are never like the actual focus of the practice, but they were punting like right in front of us. Each punter got eight punts, and it was right in front of us. I had actually I wrote an article like on the morning of the OTAs, like, here's what I'm hoping to see. Sort of a preview of the practice or whatever. And one of the things was like, I hope we get a good look at the punters. And they put them right in front of the media for us to kind of see them both kind of square off. And I thought Aaron Sipos decisively had a better day than Ty Zentner. I timed each punter's hang times on their punts. And Sipos had a nice average of 4.92, which is pretty good. Any punt over five is good. So we had three punts that were over five. There was a 5.13, a 5.11, and a 5.18. Zentner's average was 4.47, which stinks if we're going to be honest here. At one punt, it was actually five exactly, 5.00. Two bad punts. One was after a bad snap, so I won't put that totally on him. And then another punt, he shanked. It actually wound up kind of going out of bounds, like near the end zone, but it was not what it's not what they were trying to do in that drill. So he kind of shanked that punt and went off to the side. Hang time was 3.81 on that punt. But yeah, decisive win on day one for Aaron Sipos, which I know that our listeners and I know that our readers weren't happy. My readers weren't happy to see Sipos won day one. I imagine our listeners will not be happy about that either.
I mean, it's not a good outcome. And it's a situation where, you know, you have Zentner here. He's competing with Sipos, but they should still not like, it shouldn't be just one of those two wins the job. It should be like Zentner versus Sipos versus the field, like of people who are on other teams or what. Like the Eagles, like, better think long and hard about adding someone if they can, or at least even like on the practice squad. I'm sorry, Howie, but yeah, it might have to burn a practice squad. You have like 16 of those, right, or whatever now. Like, you don't need to get cute with the roster. Like, oh, we can't spend an extra 90 man or six practice squad. Just do it, because I don't need to rehash it. But the punter has been a disaster in each of your last two playoff losses. So maybe don't just.
It reminds me of the, I don't know how much you watched Hard Knocks last year with the Lions, but the backup quarterbacks, David Blau, and I forget who the other guy was, they're competing for like the backup job.
No, sorry, he was with the
49ers. No. They're competing for the backup job. They cut them both, and then Sudfeld's their backup quarterback. So like, I think that is a possible outcome at punter too, where they're just unhappy with both of them, and they bring in a third guy that, you know, loses a competition with some other team, but is better than, you know, either of the two Eagles.
That's what the Eagles did with Tebow versus Matt Barkley. Neither of them won. It was, what was that guy's name? Like Steve, you went to Miami, I think.
I remember that. Yeah. I forget his name.
He went to the Colts afterwards. I forget his name. Not really important, but I really want to know it because it's bothering me. Maybe I can look that up later.
That would have been what? That would have been also 2015 as well, right?
Yeah. It's like on the tip of my tongue too. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
I got you. Why don't you get on to the next thing? Morris, I'll look that up in the background.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
So there you go. Anyway, I have a couple quick hitters, I think, here for you. Let me pull up my notes because I looked away for a sec. Dan Arnold, who the Eagles signed kind of, I guess like a month ago or so. Really nice, tough, leaping catch in traffic that drew praise and high fives from his fellow tight ends. So, you know, I think that's a good sign for him.
Okay.
I liked Dan Arnold. I think I mentioned that when the Eagles played the Cardinals in 2020. I think that was like Jalen Hurts' second start. I remember him making some like big catches in that game. And the Eagles defense wasn't good, to be clear. But still, like, he made some like, oh, that guy's interesting. Is he good? Kind of plays. So I think he's going to be kind of a player to watch here. The Joseph Ngata, who the Eagles gave the biggest UDFA signing bonus to, Clemson, right? Clemson wide receiver.
Yep.
Who I've referred to previously, I think with Ben Solak, as a poor man's AJ Brown. He had a couple catches, and I really like how he runs after the catch. He's physical. He's not scared. He's not shying away from contact at all. Like, he runs through tackles. Obviously, they're not tackling right now, but he still, like, runs through contact. Those other guys might kind of not be as enthusiastic as he is. So definitely think he's a guy to watch. I know he, you had mentioned that he may have run the wrong route on an option route. Sirianni and Brian Johnson kind of got on him for that. But, you know, it's a UDFA. This is early in the offseason, so I'm really not too worried about that. And he's probably more of like a practice squad kind of guy anyway, roster bubble. And then lastly, I have...
before you move on from him real quick, he was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. So he was like a big-time prospect heading into college. And then just, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. Like, he didn't, I guess, you know, I don't want to say it didn't work out, but he didn't, I guess, live up to expectations there, obviously, you know, going undrafted or whatever. But I think he's like a guy that can maybe fill a similar type of role that Zach Pascal has. So I think, you know, maybe that's like the absolute best case scenario for him, like during training camp. You can't expect that, of course. But if he were to somehow make the team, I believe it would be in that capacity.
Maybe Dan Arnold, you could say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's more of like a receiver than, you know, sort of a blocker. But yeah, I mean, those and even Calcaterra can maybe even fill a role similar to that as well. Yeah.
And again, I agree with you. Those guys aren't necessarily known for being blockers, but like, this is their path. That role is open. Like, maybe they have to reinvent themselves a little bit and get better and really work on that. It's not to say just because it hasn't happened, it can't happen, but we'll see. Two more things. I have Ian Book was quarterback 3 ahead of Tanner McKee. Not shocking, because McKee's a rookie. Book was here not during last offseason, but during the year, so he has a leg up a little bit with some of what they're doing schematically, and that's part of the point of what they're doing now, is to, you know, get reps and be able to get through those. So, you know, that could certainly change, and I think it will change at some point. And then I guess the last thing I have for now, before you go again, is kind of like hard to get too much out of Brian Johnson and Sean Desai, like learning new things about them when, again, it's a lighter practice. It's 7-on-7. Like, I don't know. I can't really tell you. I like learned about a lot about like new scheme things or new looks or anything like that.
Well, here's what I'll say about Brian Johnson. Like, he watched the practice from the sideline, which I thought was interesting. Yep. And he's got the quarterback background, of course. He was a quarterback himself, a very good one at Utah in college. And he was, you know, the Eagles quarterback's coach, of course, last year. But he was watching from the sideline. I wonder if he was, like, forcing himself to not focus on quarterbacks and focus on, you know, in this case, like, there was no offensive line out there, but maybe focus on the receivers in this case, because he's now the offensive coordinator. And he's, you know, he's overseeing the entire offense. So I wonder if that was a purposeful choice by him to watch the practice from the sideline, which I kind of respect.
I think that's a good point. I noticed that too. I don't think I wrote it down, but I was thinking in my head, like, I don't think Steichen was ever on the sideline. I think he was always back by the quarterbacks, like where Sirianni is behind
and Johnson as well was always back behind the quarterbacks.
Yeah,
of course,
as he should have been, because he's actually directly working with them at the time. But yeah, I think that could be a fair point. I did see Jalen Hurts like talk to him on the sideline there at one point. So yeah, I think there could be something to that. Desai, I didn't really even notice at all, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wondered, like, you know, just sort of what his on field, like, field general kind of demeanor would be. Like, Jim Schwartz, you know, he made himself known often during practices, like, he'd, you know, be screaming or whatever at times. And then also like joking around a lot of times, particularly with like offensive players. But yeah, he's, I guess, you know, the early indications are that, you know, Sean Desai is maybe a little quieter on the field. Yeah. But we'll see how much we notice him during practice.
And Gannon, forward. I feel like, would typically, or at least I feel like, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, like, kind of watch practices from like, and he had coached DBs, so I feel like he kind of watched it from back there, as opposed to
Schwartz,
I don't think was there. He was at different parts. I always remember Schwartz and 7-on-7 lining up like right where the center would be, but facing the defense, because like, he doesn't care about like what the quarterback's doing, so he's just trying to look at all of his defense from the quarterback perspective. But not every coach does that. And not, you know, I don't, how much of that, all that really matter? I don't know. But it's kind of interesting to note. And it's one of the few things we can kind of actually notice when we're there. So I'll put that down. I think I have two more things. Number one, running back usage. The Eagles were rotating those guys to be expected. Kenneth Gainwell and Boston Scott, I believe, were the first two up with the first team. But, like, again, it just that does not mean like they're going to be the top two leaders in carries or anything. It's pretty early in the offseason to read into any of that. There's going to be a rotation there. Those guys are going to split touches. I'm sure if someone is playing really well, that guy's going to get a lot more touches until they might not be playing as well. I think they're going to kind of ride the wave there at that spot. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. One thing I'll add to the running back discussion too is like DeAndre Swift caught the ball really well, which you would expect. But I actually like the way that Rashad Penny caught the ball in practice yesterday. Just during, and again, we're just talking about individual drills. The Seahawks didn't really use him that way as a receiver. I think over his career in Seattle, which is 5 years, which of course were cut short big time by all the injuries that he had. But he only, I think he only had like 20 something career catches so far in the NFL. But he didn't seem to have any issue catching the football. I thought he caught it pretty easily and, you know, it like didn't fight the ball or anything like that. Just brought it in, turned up the field. So I wonder if I don't know why the Seattle wouldn't have used him more, at least in the screen game, because that guy's a, that guy's a bee to tackle in the open field and he's fast and he's huge. So like I'm really interested to see how they rotate these guys in and out in real games, but I wonder how much we'll even see of Rashad Penny in training camp. Like I wonder how much they'll even use him, because keep that guy in bubble wrap and make sure you have him ready for the regular season. Don't get him hurt in training camp before he even gets to play for you.
What's the point of, like, you know, it's not like wide receiver where you're like building a chemistry with a quarterback, you know, like you're, it's not, I mean, obviously there has to be some timing things with the screen game and offensive line and whatnot. It's like, you know, for the most part, just, I agree with you. Honestly,
get it,
almost like just put them on at a certain point, depending on like how your record is in the season, depending on the season's going, almost like put him on bubble wrap till the playoffs. Cause like that's when, that's when he's going to matter, be the most valuable and matter the most, especially his style of play. I feel like you need that guy. Like if you're only getting him for 11 games, you want those 11 games to include like the end of the season or into the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure.
And that kind of, I guess, sounds obvious with a lot of players, but like with him especially, like that's, you need him for those moments. Like think back to the Super Bowl. I don't think it's like they lost the Super Bowl because the running backs weren't good enough, or like it wasn't that direct one-to-one, but running game wasn't good in the Super Bowl and it could have been better. So if you have,
They scored, they scored at will basically on the Chiefs, with the exception of, you know, one drive in the second half. And of course the very unfortunate fumble. But certainly, they can use a guy that can, you know, break a game open, like a Rashad Penny or like a DeAndre
Swift. Keep the chains moving, kind of just be unstoppable. Last thing I had was Olamide Zaccheaus. Mentioned him earlier.
Okay.
Getting some work with the first team, in part because, again, Devontae not there. Quez was ahead of him, I believe you could say, as a wide receiver three, but and they're different players. Our BGN's own Johnny Page did a good breakdown on both of those guys for Bleeding Green Nation earlier this week, so you can check out his film review on them. But I think I've said this before. I don't think that it's so much wide receiver three, like one over the other. Like they're only going to play one of those two guys as much as they're going to play both, but in different roles. Mm-hmm. And I think the snap count could kind of vary both on matchup and also how they're looking at a certain time. Like if Quez continues to be as unreliable as he was at the end of last year, then certainly his playing time is going to go way down, I would think. But, you know, Quez has that field stretching ability. In addition, can be, I think, like effective on a crossing route like he was on that first catch of the day, pass from Jalen Hurts. Olamide is more of that and kind of like a maybe underrated new element to the Eagles offense, because they didn't really have that so much. I would say maybe like Kenny Gainwell later in the year, a guy you can kind of dump off to, and then he can kind of make things happen after the catch. He can turn like a 5 yard short curl maybe into a first down or a longer gain. You have that little bit, I think, now with Olamide.
Yeah, he actually was kind of used similarly to Quez with the Falcons. especially like when you compare, you know, what Quez was not last year, but in 2021, where he was the number two receiver and also sort of the third guy, just in general in the pecking order in the passing game, behind, you know, Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Quez was, you know, sort of the third guy behind Devontae and Dallas Goedert. But they used him the same way. It's sort of like a downfield receiver. And he definitely does not have Quez. So he has, you know, good speed.
I mean, but few people have Quez.
He doesn't have Quez's speed, right? So, like, most of the players on the team acknowledge that Quez is the fastest guy, you know, on the roster. So he doesn't have that kind of speed, but he was a much more reliable player than Quez was last year.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be interesting to see the evolution of Jalen Hurts a little bit. He's not like a check down kind of guy, and I don't think he really needs to be relative to other quarterbacks, because a lot of quarterbacks who would check down in certain situations, well, Jalen can just take off running and get, you know, 8 yards or whatever that way. But there are times when I think back to the 49ers game specifically, I thought that was a little bit of a different look for Jalen Hurts and the Eagles offense, where because the 49ers are so athletic and like keyed in on Jalen running, like they're not going to allow him to do that. But where they were vulnerable a little bit is in that, like, what they were willing to surrender, which is like, you know, short middle of the field, like 5 yards a pop. And the Eagles just kept taking that. And I think there were a couple of plays in that game where like Gainwell made a catch, or someone made the catch over the middle of the field and then was able to like make someone miss and get a first down that way. So I think Olamide is going to, you know, kind of brings that element to the offense. I'm not saying like that's this amazing thing or like unlocks the offense to a new level, but it's a new little wrinkle. And I think it's nice to have like a check down option like that available to them. And certainly sometimes, you know, look, you can scheme things up. You can try to do your best, but sometimes you need a guy to make a play. And I feel like Olamide might be able to do that here and there, where it's third and eight and nothing is there. And instead of forcing it, you get the ball to him for what could be a 3 yard catch. He makes someone miss. Maybe he doesn't even get the first down, but maybe he gets it to fourth and one. And all of a sudden, you know, you're able to go for it. I think they've upgraded in that kind of area, I think.
He's small, by the way. Like, he was standing next to Britton Covey. Not a big difference between those two guys.
Yeah. Yeah, he is smaller for sure, but I like him.
All right, one more. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I think I like his game. I like him. I think he's a good player.
One more depth chart note that I'll just point out real quick. You mentioned that Ian Book was number three ahead of McKee. It's because McKee's a rookie. And similarly, at safety, the two guys playing with first team was Terrell Edmonds and Reed Blankenship. And then even beyond them, like the second team was
Reed was at the podium
and
too.
Justin Evans.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Reed got some podium time. And then Sidney Brown was like sort of more third team safety, which again, totally not unexpected at all. Like, rookies they let them kind of get their sea legs a little bit. And ultimately Sidney Brown is going to get an opportunity to start as a rookie. And, you know, to show that he deserves a start as a rookie. But certainly there's a battle there between those three guys for two starting spots. Again, I think they're going to actually play some three safety sets. So whoever is left out of the starting lineup is still going to get some playing time this year, even if guys don't get hurt. And Sidney Brown, by the way, I think, like, you know, a theme of this podcast has been like, what do they actually look like in terms of their size versus what it says on paper. So he's 5'11". You know, I think 211 pounds. Again, he doesn't look out of place on the field in any way. Like, he's fine. Like, he looks like a normal safety size player. So I think he's fine there. You know, moved around really well, in my opinion. But just to start off, it was Edmonds and Blankenship, which, again, not a big surprise. And Blankenship's, were you there for his press conference?
No, I left at that point.
So my boy Ed Kratz, who sits next to me in the Eagles media house, was asking Reed a question. He said, "You look bigger this year." And the way it kind of came out from Ed, and initially it was like, "What do you think? I'm fat?" Like, Reed Blankenship didn't say that, but like, it sounded like that way. And then Ed, you know, not corrected what he, but sort of, said what he meant, really. He was like, "No, you look swole." and Reed goes, "Well, thank you." But yeah, Reed Blankenship does look bigger than he did last year. And he sort of even acknowledged that he wanted to you know, add muscle for this, that, or the other reason. But yeah, he does look like bigger than he did this time last year.
I think
year.
Reed and Terrell are going to be the top two snap takers at safety this mm-hmm. season. That's not to say
it's a good bet. Sydney,
yeah, I mean, I don't even think that shouldn't be. I don't think that's like a hot take. I think people. I think Sydney Brown's exciting, but like I just, you know, he's a rookie, and safety is a position I think that takes time. I think he could have a role
like N'Kobe yeah, last year.
I think he could have a role in the defense, like you just said, with three safety kind of looks. And obviously, there's going to be injuries. Well, not hopefully not at safety or anywhere, but like realistically, there could be some injuries. So you know, he might get a chance to play. But I also like. I don't discount Justin Evans in here. Like the Eagles kind of like he's not like a total just like non-factor. Now I'm not saying he should start or anything, but like I think the Eagles like Justin Evans a little bit more than probably people would think.
Did I tell the story about him on the podcast?
I don't know. That's what I'm kind of alluding to, but I don't know if you were able to say that. So I didn't want
to. I think it's okay to say that. So I think it's okay to say that they liked what they saw of him in the preseason yep. last year when he was with the Saints. And they reached out to the Saints about a potential trade and didn't work out that way. They actually wound up trading for C.J. Gardner-Johnson with the Saints instead. Hmm. But they did have interest also in Justin Evans, and you know nothing happened right. there. But you know he becomes a free agent this offseason, and boom, right. they're right on him. So he's a guy that they've had their eye yeah. on for a while.
So I wouldn't just assume like, oh, he's just you know fodder. Like totally discount him. So it's another potential roadblock to Sydney Brown playing, but. It's fine. He's a third round safety. It's not like he has to play year one. That's not, it shouldn't be an expectation. Mm-hmm. Especially when there are experienced people ahead of him. And then like, look, Reed looked really good in camp last year. And I liked when he had to play in the regular season. I thought the fact that he became the first undrafted rookie free agent to ever pick off Aaron Rodgers. That's not just like a cute little thing. Like that was a really good pick too. That wasn't like a tip ball. Like that was an amazing, no pun intended.
Oh yeah, he read that play and he made a break on it.
That was incredible. Yeah. That was like one of the most impressive plays I've seen, like at least in a while. Because it was just
he was the most impactful rookie on the team last year.
Well, very very low bar to clear, but yes, it's true. So yeah, I don't know why like, he's just getting kind of discounted there. I think he's definitely a player to feel. I feel more optimistic about him than I do in N'Kobe. Yeah, to your point,
sure.
Because I think he showed more. All right, any. Like final observations before we get to final thoughts.
I think we pretty much covered
everything
in my notes. Anyway,
the next Eagles OTA practice, the second and final, will be at some point next week. I think like
it'll either be the sixth, which I believe is a Tuesday, or the eighth,
yeah.
which is a Thursday. I think the Eagles are leaning toward letting us in on the eighth.
So that would be next Thursday. Is when we would potentially be doing our second one. We'll do the same thing here, recap podcast, 12-hour practice notes up. So you can stay tuned with that. And then we'll be off until, well, I mean, we'll still be here, but the Eagles will be off until training camp begins in late July. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, do you have any final thoughts?
Don't Nelson Aguilar after that final OTA practice.
I'm sure the players are listening.
Final thoughts. Yeah, I mean, this is my favorite time of year when like I can actually enjoy my summer. So I'm looking forward to doing that, you know, down at the Jersey Shore, Long Beach Island, a little bit more specifically for me. I think one of the things I'd like to do this summer is hit as many Jersey Shore towns as I can for a bike ride.
Oh.
So like, you know, Cape May, Sea Isle, Avalon, Ocean City, Brigantine, you know, like Lavalette, Ortley Beach, you know, the seaside area.
Asbury Park.
It might be a little north. That might be a little too far north. So I want to hit like more just sort of like seaside, Lavalette, Ortley, and down from there. Because those are like the shore areas that people from Philly frequent.
Okay.
I feel like the cutoff is probably... You know, like, and I think actually it's, you know, like Seaside and like that whole area is more North Jersey than sure. Philly, but there's still Philly people that go there. But I think that's kind of the cutoff of where like Philly people will go to.
LBI is mixed.
So that's like exit, it's like 80 something on the parkway. Anything 80 and below, Philly people will go to. And then I feel like Long Beach Island is the first one where there's more Philly than New York. And then, of course, it becomes. More and more Philly the further south you go.
It's mixed, you would say, right? I'd say LBI is mixed.
It's LBI is mixed, but I'd say there's more Philly than New York.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Obviously, like OC, Philly. Not the biggest OC guy. People really love
it. Wildwood, of course, is super Philly. It's actually, it's Philly and French Canadian.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that's big. Interesting. Do you want to tell me about Kristen Roach? Oh, wait, hold on. First, before we do that, actually, follow up.
Okay.
Did you get any good recommendations for hashtag hobbies for Jimmy?
I did. That recommendation did not. There's actually, like you had mentioned, the disc yes. golf, and several people yeah, recommended that as well. So yeah, that was the most common one. And somebody mentioned national parks, which there are none near here, which is a bit of a bummer. I think the closest one is probably in Maine, Acadia. But yeah, I'd love to do that, but that requires travel. But yeah, I think the disc golf was the most common.
I bet you have some good courses like relatively near you. You should look that up. I bet you there are some nearby.
Disc golf?
Yeah, I would guess so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, probably. There's a little more open space out here than there is obviously in the city.
Yeah, there's a good one in Philly called Sedgley. It's out kind of by like right above the art museum, I guess, basically, like in that area. Like kind of like not quite in, I guess, but like near like Wissahickon. If you can get one there in the city, I'm sure. Yeah, there's plenty. And it's kind of tight. It's not like, it's good. I like playing it. I think it's bigger than you might expect for a city, but it's not the same as some open field ones. Tyler Park in Bucks County is a really good one that I go to. Some of my friends sometimes. That's like it's a big course. And also, I think it goes up to like 27. We don't play the 27. We play the 18. But that's huge. And it's like it can be a long thing. Like, obviously, golf can be. It's probably longer, the actual golf, ball golf, which I should say. But yeah, I think it's worth a try. And you could probably get a disc for, $20, not even, or a pack. So yeah, it's really cheap. And again, the barrier to entry is so low. As long as you can kind of throw it, you'll figure it out and you'll get better with time or not. Jimmy, why don't you tell me about Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors?
Yeah, 856-906-9295 is where you can reach her if you're looking to buy or sell your home. Of course, voted by God as the greatest realtor in the history of the universe. Again, 856-906-9295.
WinYourNation.com is where you find my work. PhillyVoice.com is where you find Jimmy Kemsky's work. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Jimmy Kemsky. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brandon Gouton. You can book me on Cameo. Someone just did that to roast a Cowboys fan in their little Madden League draft that they're doing. So there you go. You can also check out Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. We're going to righteousfelon.com using discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. You can, what else am I forgetting? I don't know. Just subscribe to the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed. How about that? And also check out the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel, where we have YouTube videos of some of the podcasts that we do, including the latest NFC East mixtape episode, where RJ Ochoa and I talked about reasons to be bullish about every NFC East team. And next week we'll be doing the bearish episode, reasons to kind of preempting your dumpster fire thing a little bit here, Jimmy. Sorry about that.
No, well, each month I have a big calendar whiteboard, and I have what I sort of pre-plan what I'm
I've seen it thinking I, about doing, I've been to your place and I've seen month. This the it's huge.
It's a big ass whiteboard. And so the dumpster fire is already on the whiteboard, beginning with the Cowboys, June 26th. Looking forward to. Actually, I kind of hate that. I kind of hate writing those because I know they're going to be like super heavily scrutinized by the teams that I'm trashing. So they have to be on point. And I spend I spend more time on those than probably anything else I do throughout the
bulletproof,
year.
Bulletproof, I think, is how you describe it typically. They'd be
bulletproof is how I try to make them be. Yeah, if like the response is, if you,
then you did good.
Typical Philly, blah, 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 blah. But they don't actually refute anything in the article. I know I've done a good job.
Yeah, that makes sense. Ad hominem is a good way to gauge your quality of your piece. All right, we'll get out of here. And we'll be back with you next week to recap Eagles OTA practice day 2.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.